Here's a little quiz. What rights are guaranteed under the First Amendment? If you said freedom of speech, you're doing pretty well. But there are four more. Freedom of the press, of religion, the right to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Ken Paulson is the president and CEO of the First Amendment Center. I talked to him after a presentation Tuesday night that aimed to boost our understanding of the rights granted by the First Amendment through music. I started by asking him about why he created Freedom Sings.
I found that we weren't connecting with a younger generation about these critically important things and thought maybe an electric guitar would do the trick. And it's worked out beautifully well. I've been able to tap some of the most talented musicians in Nashville who joined me on the road in a narrative that spans about 100 years of American history and tells it all through what was then contemporary music. We're heartened by the reaction. It's just extraordinary. Tonight we had a standing ovation, and you can see the glistening of tears in people's eyes when we talk about Kent State. You can see women of all ages responding to a song like I Am Woman. Music is powerful and potent, and music matters. It's been a phenomenal vehicle for spreading the word about what makes this country so special.
What made you decide to champion the First Amendment so strongly?
You know, I'm a child of the 60s, and I saw what the First Amendment did. It fueled the civil rights movement. It led to the women's rights movement. It led to change in policy in a very unpopular war. I mean, as a teenager, I saw the world change because people had the power to speak freely. And that made a tremendous impression on me. And frankly, throughout my career, I've done what I can to bolster those freedoms. It just has sort of come naturally.
This is an interesting time to have a conversation about free speech on campus. This week, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education cited the Stephen Salaita case when it ranked the university one of 10 campuses with the least free speech. What do you make of the question of free speech on the University of Illinois campus?
I think the circumstances surrounding Professor Salaita are unfortunate. And my guess is that everyone involved in that wishes that certain steps hadn't been taken. But I think in fairness, you have to weigh free speech campus-wide on a wide variety of factors. And I have to tell you, all over this country, there are often cases where administrators make decisions they shouldn't have made. But you cannot write off free speech on a campus as a result. You have to look at a lot of different factors. And I wouldn't presume to pass judgment on the University of Illinois. But I do think you have to ask, are there diverse groups? Are they able to say what they want to say? Are protests common? Is there a free speech zone where people are limited, or can you say what you want to say anywhere on campus? Is there a robust student media? Are students engaged? Those are the things you need to measure in deciding whether a university embraces the First Amendment. And so I'm not a big believer in lists. It's not about embarrassing one school or another, but each and every university needs to take stock of what they're doing in terms of free expression. This should be the marketplace of ideas, and there's no shortcut to honoring the First Amendment, except making sure that every voice is heard and every idea is honored.
Your foundation, the First Amendment Center, publishes a State of the First Amendment report every year. In 2014, you found that 30% of Americans can't name one of the five freedoms protected by the First Amendment.
We live in a time of astonishing constitutional illiteracy. I've spent my life in newspaper work, and I know they have faded. But I'm not concerned about print on paper. I'm concerned about information getting to people and people thinking about these core values of our nation and the need for every view to be heard. What happens when you don't know any of the freedoms of the First Amendment? You're shortchanging yourself and you're shortchanging the nation. We've got to do a better job in America's schools of telling young people the five freedoms of the First Amendment are what truly make America special, and these are what they are. And when you put these together, it makes a nation unlike any other on the planet. Knowing the five freedoms of the First Amendment is the most patriotic thing a young person can do. And anyone who's listening to this, I challenge you tomorrow at the dinner table to share those five freedoms with your young person and make sure they never forget them.
Do you see social media changing free speech and how free speech works?
In many ways, social media has been a blessing for those of us who believe very strongly in free speech. I mean, there's no question that Thomas Jefferson would go nuts on Twitter. James Madison would be big on Instagram. I mean, the founding fathers were all idea people, and they wanted to make sure ideas were widely disseminated. And the notion that somebody can sit in their home, tweet an idea, and it can be seen globally in a millisecond. It would have been astonishing and gratifying to them. So the core principles of the First Amendment can remain intact in a social media universe. But here's what I'm concerned about. Information comes so quickly and with such brevity that we're not really discussing issues in depth. And something like Obamacare, no matter where you are on the spectrum, it's a complicated piece of legislation. And I don't know many people who have read every word. And yet tens, hundreds of millions of people have tweeted their support or opposition to it. In some ways, social media is too easy. It gives us the impression that we're citizens when, in fact, we're just phoning it in. Social media is great and phenomenal on so many levels, but it's really not very deep, and it's really not very meaningful except in the aggregate.
You've spent a lot of time working in journalism, and you're shepherding a student newspaper now. What do you tell students about the future of newspapers and journalism?
Well, newspapers will one day not be here. Print on paper is not going to work a lot longer. There's an entire generation that's decided newsprint is not for them, and that's fine. But journalism will still be around. And what I often say in commencement speeches is that because of the marketing power of today's 18 to 22-year-olds, if they decided they wanted more information about foreign policy, they would have it overnight. If they wanted more information about social injustice, they would have it overnight. If instead they search for Kardashians, they will have all the Kardashians they can handle. They can decide the news and information that will be shared across America from this point on. And if they would just demand the best, they would get the best in journalism, in conversation, and in democracy.